Today on Annenberg Radio News.
I hated America. I wanted to move back to India.
Hear about one woman's journey to find her true calling. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, April 14th, 2011. I'm Megan Dickey. Students will no longer be ticketed for being late during the first hour of class. The new policy, announced today, comes after school police data shows 88% of those tickets go to students of color. The ACLU, LAPD, and the Community Rights Campaign joined forces to craft the policy. Manuel Criollo is the lead organizer of the Community Rights Campaign.
Time and time again, what they repeat to us is that a lot of them feel scared to even come to school because of the way that LAPD is basically waiting for students, or have often waiting for students right in front of bus stops or right in front of schools.
Criollo says students often miss school to avoid getting tickets, but he expects this policy will boost attendance. The whooping cough outbreak has reached new heights in California. In 2010, more than 8,000 cases were reported. That prompted local lawmakers to make a change. Dave Duhlberg has more.
A new threat has made its way through California's school system, and it's not your typical influenza. LA County's Director of Public Health, Jonathan Fielding, says the real scare is whooping cough, also known as pertussis.
We're in the middle of a very substantial pertussis epidemic. We have more cases now than we have ever had since 1947.
State lawmakers passed a new law requiring all children between the 7th and 12th grades to show proof that they received their whooping cough booster shot called Tdap after the age of 7. The law will go into effect July 1st. Fielding hopes parents who usually keep their children away from vaccinations for personal beliefs will recognize how serious whooping cough really is.
It's very important that everybody be immunized, and we would expect and hope that all parents will want to protect their children and protect others in their community by making sure that their children are up to date with their immunizations.
Kaiser Permanente pediatrician Rebecca Crane says vaccination, not medication, is the best form of prevention against the bacterial disease.
Even if you are diagnosed with pertussis, there's not a medicine you can get to end your symptoms and to end the contagiousness.
Crane emphasized that people should have the vaccination again after they have turned 18 years old. Along with pertussis, the Tdap also covers diphtheria and tetanus. Dave Duhlberg, Annenberg Radio News.
California's Senate approved a legislation today that requires public schools to incorporate gay history in social studies lessons. Local school districts will determine what content will be taught to students and in which grades. Supporters say the bill will help educate students about the LGBT community. They hope these lessons will prevent bullying, stereotypes, and suicide. Vincent Vigil is with the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Center at USC.
Just as we do with the Civil Rights Movement for African Americans, this is another underrepresented community that has been struck.
Opponents say parents might find some of the material inappropriate. The sun is out and about today. Tonight we'll have clear skies with lows in the upper 40s to mid 50s. And tomorrow, another sunny day with highs up to the mid 80s. Come tomorrow night, mostly clear skies with lows in the upper 50s. And Saturday will be sunny but breezy with highs in the upper 60s to 70s. on Annenberg Radio News, we'll hear about legislation that requires California's public schools to include gay history and social studies lessons. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa visited Los Angeles schools this morning, a day after his State of the City address, where he reiterated his commitment to education reform. Emily Frost visited the expensive school.
The mayor took a tour around the six shiny, state-of-the-art schools at the Robert F. Kennedy Complex. He wasn't visiting for any special performance or opening, but to remind the public of education accomplishments during his term. The visit came after his State of the City address last night, where Villaraigosa emphasized his commitment to school reform. LAUSD Board President Monica Garcia guided the mayor around.
Mr. Mayor, what is great about that auditorium, if you can lift the back and it seats out to where we walk down.
That's just one of the incredible features of this new public school complex, just finished last year. It's known to some as the Taj Mahal of public schools. It cost $580 million to build, making it the most expensive public school in the nation. Chuck Flores is the principal of New Open World Academy, one of the six pilot schools at RFK.
I mean, you know, the cost of the campus, I mean, that's been in the news forever. But I think it's really providing an opportunity for kids who've been disenfranchised for so long.
Flores is referring in part to the fact that for years, the district bused students out of the area to other schools. Now, if you live in a 9-block radius, you can attend school here. Flores says the school's amenities, like its beautiful library, create a better learning environment for students. Oscar Yamarillo used to attend LA High School. Now he's part of the Ambassador School of Global Leadership at RFK.
I know I love being like an ambassador, so that we can all like become like global citizens like around the world.
The mayor also referenced our globalized world.
There is no more important issue for a city if we want to be competitive in a world economy than to be educating the future generation.
But with six schools costing $500 million and a $350 million deficit remaining, the city may not be able to build new schools like those at RFK anytime soon. Emily Frost, Annenberg Radio News.
Mayor Villaraigosa's State of the City speech doesn't bode well with one South LA teacher. I caught up with Dr. Aisa Riley after the mayor's annual address. Dr. Riley fears what's next to come.
The union has fought so hard in order to get this union agreement, and now he wants to basically destroy that. It's really going to destroy our backup system.
And so, and how will that destroy your backup system, and what is the backup system?
When he talks about releasing teachers, to not just do it top down, so not to do it based on seniority, what that equates to in our mind is we get rid of the more senior teachers because they get paid a lot more. So if a teacher is making $80,000 because they've been working here for 20 years, well, we can fire that person and hire two more.
Do you have an idea for how the budget can be worked out in regards to education?
Well, as far as the budget's concerned, the union right now has proposed 12 days of furloughs, which means about a 6% pay cut to what we're getting right now. And they're prefacing it with the idea of students are only going to miss 5 days of instruction. And so by the teachers not agreeing to these 12 days of less pay, it's our fault that the budget isn't being passed. But that equates to quite a bit of money for us. And we have to live too. And we care about our students. We are here every day. We don't want any days off.
In regards to education reform in general, what do you feel is really at the heart of it?
In my opinion, I believe that the district is trying to use teachers as a scapegoat in order to make us look like we're the bad people for not wanting to take pay cuts. But in reality, our goal is to teach our students. And in order to do that, we need our pay.
Right, well, what do you think about the mayor's idea in regards to like private companies coming in and helping? Like, do you think that's realistic?
When the private companies come in and take over some of these schools around our area especially, what ends up happening is that they don't necessarily accept all of our students. So what happens is when a student isn't working out at one of their schools, they get sent here. And we end up having larger class sizes in the middle of the year, because all these students are coming mid-year because they've been kicked out of their other schools. And it also has a lot of students who, if they couldn't cut it at that other school, now we have to deal with them. And so our school somewhat becomes like a dumping ground for all these charter schools quote-unquote bad kids. And then it lowers the quality of education for our other students who we've been working with all year long.
That was Dr. Aisa Riley. She's a teacher at Jefferson High School in South LA. Now, we turn to our ongoing series on people and places in transition. One woman was on a successful path from a very young age. The only problem was, she knew it was the wrong one. A midlife career switch and an ability to see art in unlikely places took Meena Kamath on a journey around the world, from designing dentures in India to crafting much larger and heavier creations in Southern California. Caitlin Parker reports.
A colorful mural with the words from the poem The Village Blacksmith decorates the wall outside the North Hill studio of Meena Kamath. A petite Indian woman, Meena doesn't exactly look like the mighty man with large, sinewy hands mentioned in the famous poem by Longfellow. But you could say she is a modern-day version of the village blacksmith.
Now we are going to enter in our factory where we manufacture the iron gates and fences.
The motto of Meena's company is sheer poetry in metal.
In our showroom, we show all our projects, which are displayed.
Today, Meena and her employees are working on an intricate door for a client's personal wine cellar.
So that's a creation from the raw material to what we want.
Strips of forged metal intertwine like pieces of rope and wrap around carefully crafted flowers made of wrought iron.
The raw iron material is heated very high temperature, and then it is pounded, hammered, and bent.
But years ago, she forged a different path. As a child in Mumbai, Meena excelled in the arts. She could copy almost any master painting. Renoirs were her specialty.
So when I finished my high school, I told my dad I wanted to join JJ School of Arts, which was one of very famous college for an architect and artist. And my dad looked at me and said, no, I would make good living. I should become a doctor. So I dropped my idea and I started applying to medical school and dental school. And I got the admission in dental school in Bombay.
After she got her degree, Meena moved to New York to pursue a dental career in the States. But as a single girl coming to America in the 1970s, life wasn't easy.
I hated America. I wanted to move back to India.
But then, Meena took a solo road trip, 6 days, 3,000 miles from New York to California. When she arrived in L.A., she stayed with the one person she knew, a former classmate from Mumbai nicknamed Chucky. Before long, they were dating.
And we got married in 1980. So we had the dental office and dental lab, and we were both working there.
5 years later, Chucky and Meena had a son. She loved life with her family, but still felt something was lacking in her job. She yearned for something more. Decades passed. Then in 1995, she was visiting her parents back in India and had a revelation.
And I was talking to my dad, that how sick and tired I was with dentistry. And it was my dad who said, I'd done enough dentistry. And if I switch my career to arts, I think I would enjoy it more.
Back in the States, Meena stumbled upon a business for sale. She saw an ad in a newspaper that said, ornamental ironwork. She stopped by the studio and noticed a huge decorative iron gate hanging outside.
I looked at the iron gate and what I was specialized in dentistry, the cast partial. When I saw the gate, I thought there's no difference in the partial and the gates. The principles are the same.
She put a deposit down on the business that day. At this point, Meena was 55 years old. She'd been a dentist for 30 years. But the thought of starting all over didn't intimidate her. She went home and told Chucky she had found something.
And I'm going to get out of dentistry and start this. And he said, okay, go ahead.
I am Rabindra Kamath. I am Meena's husband. And I have started working for her company. Basically, Meena has a lot of vision. She's always striving to be better and bigger.
Before, in the dental office, Chucky worked with the patients and Meena was behind the scenes in the lab. Now, he calls himself her ADC, or aide de camp.
Which is a nice title for a gopher.
He always brings such humor in every aspect of life. And
Match.com says that 1 in 5 relationships start on an online dating site. But Stephanie Frischberg reports on one Match.com subscriber who didn't get her happily ever after.
Match.com. More dates, more relationships, and more marriages than any other site.
That's the slogan you'll hear on every Match.com commercial. And for a lucky few, like Joan Casper Nolan, a fairy tale ending was just a few clicks away. She decided that at 60 years old, she would find the man of her dreams.
11 and a half, almost 12 months into my being on Match, I noticed a guy had looked at my profile. And I said to myself, self, you know, you can do one of two things. You can either wait for him to email you, or you can take the initiative and email him, which I did.
Casper Nolan had written on her profile that if you bring her flowers, you'll make her smile. And when she finally decided to meet George for a first date,
sure enough, he showed up on my doorstep with flowers. And oddly enough, there are 4 people in my husband's family who have met on Match.com. 3 of us are married, including my husband and I.
But not everyone is as lucky in love as the Nolan family. An entertainment executive in Los Angeles says she was raped after her second date with Paul Wurzel, a man she met through Match.com. She later found out that Wurzel had 6 prior convictions for sexual battery. The woman has chosen to remain anonymous. She calls herself Jane Doe, and her lawyer, Mark Webb, is speaking for her.
She was under the impression that he was a legitimate guy. She had no reason to believe that he was a convicted sexual offender.
That's why Jane Doe is suing Match.com. Her lawyer claims that no one else should be allowed to sign up for the site until it tightens up its membership screening process. Reporters at the news conference asked Webb if this wasn't just a publicity stunt.
I call that as an intelligent use of the media to put out there what I consider to be a risk of danger and harm to other people and specifically women.
But legal experts disagree on how much responsibility lies with online dating sites. Lawrence Walter is a lawyer who specializes in online dating law.
I would not recommend any kind of law that would impose an obligation on an online dating site to do your job for you. You have to protect yourself.
And Joan Casper Nolan agrees.
If somebody is so good at portraying themselves differently, you know, they're certainly going to fool Match and any guidelines that Match puts into place. But I really don't feel that it's Match's responsibility. I think it's up to the individual.
Representatives from Match.com were not available for an interview, but they released a statement that says that while incidents like this are extremely rare, it doesn't make them any less horrifying. We ask all of our members to pay close attention to the safety tips on our website. There are steps you can take to protect yourself online and offline, whether you meet someone on an online dating service, through an acquaintance, or at a bar. Mark Webb says he doesn't expect Match.com to change its policies on its own. That's why he thinks this is a question for the courts. Stephanie Frischberg, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with Candace Brain to see what's coming up on Annenberg Television News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
The Dodgers are back in L.A. to play their first home game since the violent fan incident. Find out what new Dodger players have to say about the stadium security. And USC School of Social Work is holding a candlelight vigil tonight for homeless children. We spoke with organizers of the event to learn more. Stay tuned for our newscast at 6 o'clock tonight.
Thank you, Candace. And that's it. That's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Smitha Bondade, Laurel Galanter, Stephanie Guzman, and Carl Nickenig. Christine Trang is our producer. The executive producer is Jessica Flores. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Megan Dickey.